Conference is being recorded.
Go ahead, Jason. Thank you.
Very good. Good morning, everyone. Just want to, I don't know if you guys have had an opportunity to look at the information regarding my background. I included a CV with the handout material that I sent to you guys. Myself, I've been in the industry for about 6 years in the restoration portion regarding fire damage, mold damage, asbestos, water drying, etc. I am the general manager of our Colorado Springs branch, and Lynette asked me to speak a little bit this morning on converting smoking units to non-smoking units. Understanding that many of you are in the health industry, some of this information may be repetitive, but not knowing the audience, I thought I would just start with the basics and go into some general information for cleanup, deodorization, different chemicals and processes for those cleanups, and put together an average cost sheet as well on a 1,000-square-foot apartment for being cleaned. So going into the handout, question, what is the best way to get rid of smoke odor? My best answer is either quit or don't let people smoke inside, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with that answer. And the truth is cigarette smoke permeates into furniture, carpet, drywall, windows, and just about every nook and cranny in a dwelling. Through my years of experience, I've seen a number of different affected units, from just a very light odor to basically it looks like somebody painted the walls and windows and doors and different fixtures in the particular unit completely yellow. I've seen from some of the most extremes. The purpose of this exercise is to understand smoke and associated cigarette odor, understand chemicals, equipment, timelines, average cost for a carpeted two-bedroom apartment with appliances. In this presentation, we'll examine and discuss processes used to remediate through cleaning and deodorization of cigarette odors. We'll look at damage assessment and cleaning scopes, products used to accomplish deodorization, timelines, and estimated costs for such undertakings. First, looking at what exactly is smoke. Of course, it's a foreign substance or a residue, which is defined as the airborne solid and liquid particles and fire gases evolved when a material undergoes combustion. Taking that a step further and to exactly what tobacco smoke is, it also consists of solid particles and gases, of which more than 4,000 different chemicals have been identified in tobacco smoke. Solid particles that make up about 10% of the tobacco smoke include tar and nicotine. The gases and vapors make up about 90% of tobacco smoke. The major gas present is carbon monoxide. Others include formaldehyde, ammonia, nitrogen oxides, pyridine, vinyl chloride, acrolein, and many others. Reports suggest that acrolein is the strongest odor-causing element in the tobacco smoke. Different assessments for the damage for these smoke-affected units are, of course, visual, olfactory, and touch. The first step in determining the extent of smoke damage is to identify the extent and intensity of the foreign substance. Typically, this is done through casual observation when we come in to do the inspection, typically walking down the hallways of an apartment community or just knowing the different units that we've been in. You can clearly see how heavily a unit is affected through the contrast of the affected and unaffected areas within the unit. The normal undamaged walls in comparison to the normal undamaged walls that we may encounter. Second assessment is through olfactory sense, which if you're a smoker, you may still smell the odor, but for typical non-smokers, it's usually a lot stronger. So you may have someone move into a specific unit that is lightly affected, but if they're a non-smoker, it may heavily irritate them or bother them. So finally, there's what we call the industry white glove test. This, of course, is your most primitive test, which is to take either a white handkerchief or, in our industry, we also utilize what's called a Kim sponge or dry sponge, which can be wiped on the wall and will actually tell if there's a presence of a smoke residue present on that wall. It's not the most precise testing, but it's pretty much the best we have in the industry at the time. I'm sure there's further chemical testing that can be done to actually pull a sample of the suspect material, which would be similar to what we do in asbestos testing, and have it analyzed by a lab where they would go through and separate what the common materials are within that product material, and then break out what some foreign substance chemicals and materials might be. Areas to test, depending on smoke concentration, should include directly over doorways and openings, on flat surfaces or walls or ceilings, and fabrics. Carpeting also provides an excellent medium for checking the contrast between protected and unprotected areas. Heavy cigarette smoke or cigar smoke will sometimes reveal distinct shading, which I spoke a little bit about earlier in regards to the visual comparison of affected and unaffected areas. Shading can include colors ranging from yellow, amber, to brown, and sometimes with a pink cast. The next section goes into talking about elements of deodorization and cleaning. What do we have to do to get rid of those contaminants? That can follow a large gamut. Again, it's depending on the severity and the extent of the contamination. So let's first talk about defining deodorization. It begins with the prefix D, which means from, away from. Best meaning of deodorization is to take away or remove odor. There are many different types of removal methods that can be utilized for cleaning one of these affected units. First, of course, is demolition of the entire unit in building materials, which is not something that I have ever had to do in my 8 years of career. Sanding, scraping, or grinding. I have had to refinish cabinetry that was not sealed prior to the smoking occupant being in the unit, and we did require refinishing those cabinets just because the nicotine and tar was so heavy on them that there wasn't, other than painting them with some type of seal coat, there wasn't a whole lot else we could do to encapsulate that odor. Abrasive resurfacing, and then cleaning. Many different ways of cleaning as well. We can utilize water-based detergents and degreasers to emulsify and dissolve residues by hand application or use of non-aqueous solvents. Term emulsification, basically what that means is the breakdown of whatever that substance is. We use emulsification chemicals as well in protein fires, which emit a colorless smoke, which is not visibly able to be seen when you're in the cleaning process. So you have to use that product to break down those protein molecules in that smoke. One of the products that we use most often in not only cigarette smoke, but fire damage remediation is a product by a company that produces Unsmoke, and it's a 99 odor counteractant. This chemical can be applied with a pressure sprayer and washed from the wall. It can also be followed up with an application of Thermal 55, which is applied through a thermal fogger, which basically emits a fragrance odor, and it's used in conjunction with the odor counteractant. A lot of times you'll have people come in, they're not very experienced in cleaning these type of units, and you know, they'll throw out, oh, we just need a little bit of thermal fogging in here. Well, that'll mask the problem for a specific amount of time, but it will not completely get rid of the odor unless you address the problem at the source. So other deodorization techniques would include ambient air treatment, which would be ventilation through the replacement of contaminated air with fresh air by use of exhaust fans, blowers, and negative pressure environments. I recently had a case that I was working on where a property manager called me that had a cigar shop right smack dab in the middle of a strip center. Well, the unit next to that cigar shop happened to be a rehabilitation center for smokers and alcoholics. Well, you can imagine the problem in that situation. They had nothing more than a simple bath ventilation fan in the cigar shop, in which people came to on a daily basis and smoked cigars in the shop. It's one of, I think, two or three places in Colorado Springs that you can actually still smoke inside. But, of course, that odor was permeating into the adjacent suites, which ultimately led to the rehabilitation clinic moving out. It was a tough situation trying to rehab people when all they could smell was cigar smoke. Other problems we found in there was shared ventilation systems that had to be separated. And we actually designed an exhaust system that does a certain number of air exchanges per day for that building and exhausts and pulls the smoke from that particular suite. The cost of that ventilation system alone was about $12,000. So it can get relatively elaborate when you're dealing with these type of situations. We also utilize HEPA filtration through use of high-efficiency particulate removal filters, absorbers through the use of carbon filters to retain airborne odor particulates. These are typically used in a negative pressure situation where you have a machine that you come in if you're going to do some cleaning and pull some airborne particulates. A carbon filter in that particular machine, it pulls the air from a specific area and creates a negative pressure in that environment and will pull those odor particulates into that carbon filter. And then there's also air ionizers to precipitate airborne residues. Other things that we do in order to get rid of the odor, in addition to cleaning, now that does not always do the job. Not only will it not always do the job in terms of odor, but sometimes you still have the visual effects of the amber color, the yellowing to the drywall that has to be addressed, which is typically handled by using a water-based or solvent coating to block the transmission of odors from the contaminated surfaces. Typically what we'll do is go in and use a product like Benzer. It's actually a shellac-based product that will encapsulate those odor molecules and then two coats of paint over it. Moving further, something that is always used in cigarette smoke or fire damage smoke remediation is ozone. If you don't know what ozone is, it is a molecule composed of three atoms of oxygen. Two atoms of oxygen form the basic oxygen that we breathe, that is essential life. The third oxygen atom can detach from the ozone molecule and reattach to molecules of other substances, thereby altering their chemical composition. It is this molecule-altering property of the third atom that becomes a powerful oxidizer that breaks down odor molecules and converts them into water vapor and carbon dioxide without leaving a perfume or residue. This is a great technique for even your lightest of cigarette smoke odor. It permeates into fabrics. It permeates into the cracks and crevices of a piece of furniture. It's often used even in hotels where when the cleaning crews are coming through, it's a small box, a little bit larger than a shoe box, which will emit the ozone molecule. And like I said, oftentimes it's used in hotels as they go in and clean a room, the ozone machine in there for a few hours, clean a few other rooms, and then move that ozone along. There's a number of different elements that can affect ozone results, which would include heat, moisture, reactive material, air movement, quality of air input, time, and pretreatment. Oftentimes we'll add air movers into an area that we're emitting ozone, especially if it's a large area, to get that that molecule moving throughout the structure. You, of course, want to have some fresh air intake for the ozone machine, because if it's pulling in the contaminated air, it's not going to be as effective. The process can take up to 8 hours, but will typically eliminate your odors for good. It is important to note that ozone is hazardous to breathe. If this process is used, you, your occupancy, and their pets should not be present until the ozone process has been completed. Ozone is a pulmonary irritant for humans. The long-term effects of exposure really are not known, and it also reacts with other substances to produce different potentially toxic substances. For these specific reasons, ozone should not be used under the following circumstances, which include occupants being present, pets of any kind, fish tanks, which it will kill fish, furs, leather items, valuable artwork or antiques, valuable books and documents, unusual or valuable plants, computers and testing instruments, fuel, oil, or other petroleum or chlorinated solvents, tear gas, any strong chemicals presence, film, photographs, videotapes, valuable or heirloom fabrics, fabric wall coverings, new clothing, elastic or spandex merchandise. Back to the elements of what ozone does. That third atom is an oxidizer. What that will do, if you have plastics or rubber, say you're ozoning in a dental office, you would not want to do that with equipment present, because the oxidation of those materials basically increases the rate that specific material ages. It will cause rubber gaskets to basically corrode, not corrode, but break down and lose their effectiveness as a seal. So you definitely want to know what you're putting ozone into in the specific concentrations. It should be monitored with a metering device to ensure that OSHA levels are not exceeded in inhabited areas and to show a responsible attitude towards a potential health hazard involved. Ozone should never be used again with occupants present. Going into costs. Again, it will range with the extent of contamination treatment needed to remove and neutralize the cigarette odors. If you guys look at your other handout, I put together a sample estimate for what it would take to clean your average two-bedroom apartment. This estimate, I think, breaks out to around $4 a square foot for cleaning a 1,000-square-foot bedroom apartment, which would include wiping and cleaning all of the surfaces with the 99 unsmoked cleaner, cleaning the ductwork within the unit, as well as the building deodorization ozone treatment, which is typically charged out by the cubic foot, standard price around 4 cents a cubic foot. This would also include the clean and deodorization of any carpeting and vinyl flooring, which oftentimes we will mix 99 with the carpet cleaning solutions. If this did not handle the situation alone, you could be looking at roughly $6 a square foot to clean, seal, and paint if encapsulation was needed to further resolve the issue. With that, in our conclusion, there are a number of ways that you can see to turn a smoking unit into a non-smoking unit. Varying degrees of contamination will determine scope and extent of remediation activities needed to remedy the problem. In addition, there are a large number of people who are allergic to cigarette smoke or suffer some serious issues, breathing issues, when they come into contact with it. Even the lingering smell of a cigarette smoke left in a home by its previous occupant is not just noticeable, but may be close to intolerable to a non-smoker. So if we are not ready to limit smoking in our apartment communities, all we can consider is methods of controlling the cigarette smoke in our environments. Who knows, the next person to bask in your odor may be a hot date or prospective employer, and if they don't smoke, a noticeable odor will definitely make an impression. And with that, there's a page, I think, on the back of the outline that you guys can utilize for notes, and I'm open for questions.
John from Denver Public Health, I have a question.
Okay.
Is the information you provided to us standard knowledge in the housing industry, everything you just went over, or is this something that someone would have to be educated on?
I would not say it's standard information in the housing industry. A lot of this information has been learned through restorative processes and training classes that I've had. Typically, people think that you just come in and kills the walls and slap some paint on it and you're good to go. But, truly the restorative process when it comes in terms of either fire remediation, mold remediation, drying of buildings, there's a scientific level of it. And if you haven't had specific training in those areas, I wouldn't say it's common knowledge.
Jason?
Yes.
This is Jan Morcheski. I'm up in Fort Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And you offered a real comprehensive list. So I'm wondering if people are on a limited budget and have to prioritize, from your list, what are the most critical things to do, or doesn't it even make sense to try to do some of them without doing all of them?
I'd say ozone's probably the most effective treatment for treating odor. If you're on a limited budget, it's 4 cents a cubic foot. I would start with an ozone treatment and potentially a thermal fog and see where that gets you. Of course, carpets are always very suspect areas of holding strong odor, so you may have to take it a step further with cleaning of carpets, and then beyond that, wall washing, and then sealing and painting.
Thank you.
No problem.
I have a question also. This is Susan from Jefferson County Health, and this has been very informative. Does this deter then apartment managers then from allowing smoking when they do have to pay this and they see how involved this is in terms of cleaning a unit that smoking is in? Does it give them pause for thinking maybe we should be going smoke-free? Do you hear that at all?
To be honest with you, I don't know that they actually will spend these monies and go to these extents to always properly clean and deodorize a unit. I've looked at many, but probably done fewer than the many that I've looked at. I don't know if they put other potential smokers in those same units, or if they just come in and replace the carpet and paint the walls. To be honest with you, I wouldn't really have specific data or know how they handle this.
So you were saying that a lot of times you go in and give them the estimate for this, and then they decide not to do it then, that it's too expensive?
That's usually the case, or they go other avenues. And not knowing, because I'm not back at the project, I don't know what those avenues would be.
Jason, one of the questions I have, this is Lynette. We've talked, focused mostly this morning on the smell. Has there ever been a project that you've had to go in and get rid of the actual tobacco chemicals in a property rather than, I mean, the smell is obviously the first thing that we can identify, but has there ever been something that's carried it beyond that, and how did you handle it?
I can't say that I've specifically had to deal with addressing removal of the chemicals themselves. With saying that, my best idea of what would have to happen is, knowing that these chemicals permeate into both drywall and carpeting, which are very porous items, wiping them clean with the odor counteractant is not going to completely remove the presence of those chemicals from these absorbent materials, short of complete demolition and removal of them.
However, it looks like what you said about the ozone does create chemical changes.
Yes, ozone does create a chemical change. I would assume that in order to be completely knowledgeable of the extent of those chemical changes would be to take a pre-sample of the suspect material prior to cleaning and remediation activities, and then do a post-sample to find out, what levels of concentration permeated into the porous building materials.
So, Jason, this is Bryce up in Weld County. If a landlord were to take kind of some of the shortcuts of maybe just putting the sealer on the walls, slapping two coats of paint, and using the ionizer and those kind of things, about what would be a general cost just to do like the minimum rehabilitation of a unit, like maybe the standard 1,000 square foot apartment like you said?
Well, with cleaning it, I mean, we came up with an average price of about $4 a square foot, which would include the wiping, cleaning of the walls, the deodorization, and carpet cleaning. If you look at, I can pull what that would be. Give me one second here. If you just went in and you're looking at what would it be if you just did the deodorization with the ozone machine?
Yeah, and then painting the walls. Because what I suspect, some property managers, instead of going the whole route, they're like, well, we'll try to mask the odor, we'll cover up the yellow walls and the ceiling, and change out some of the light fixtures or something like that. So about what would be a ballpark figure for doing that?
I can tell you here in just a second. Let me make some amended changes to this estimate here. I'm going to go in and remove all of the actual physical wipe cleaning.
While Jason is doing that, could I ask if anybody else has joined the call that hasn't told us that they're on the call?
You mean people are allowed to sneak in?
Yeah.
And out.
And out, huh? I like that.
This is Karen Blondin from Otero County, sitting in for Donna Stark.
Thanks, Karen.
This is Cindy in Vacket County.
Shiloh in Pueblo County.
Jan at Tobacco Free Larimer County.
If you went with just ceiling and painting, a 1,000-square-foot apartment, you're looking at about $2,800.
Mm-hmm.
If you go in and add the deodorization into that, it increases it from 2,800 to 3,000 dollars. So, and that other estimate, we probably had about $1,000 of actually physically cleaning, wiping walls, and that also included cleaning carpets, which would not be included in the $3,000. So if you just use the ozone deodorization, seal, and paint, a rough price of around probably $2,500 to $3,000.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Tom Rafferty in Boulder, and I was just curious, you've been there for 7 years. Have you noticed any sort of spike in the percentage of your business that is smoke removal, smoke cleaning, or has it remained fairly constant?
You know, I wouldn't even say it's a strong constant. I'd say it's more of a trickle of our business.
Okay.
I don't know if this is a question for Jason or the group, but a lot of times we get asked, well, what, especially related to kids, well, if I'm moving into an apartment where there's been smoke, what would make it safe for my kid? And a lot of times people want to know that it is safe. So can we assume that if we do all the cleaning, ozone, and do the whole package, that it would be safe for kid? And then what about safe for a child with asthma or a person with a respiratory, an older person with a respiratory issue? Could we tell them that doing all this would make it safe for them?
Well, the end-all answer to that question, and really the only person that would be able to address, and this would probably be taking it to the extremes, but I answer this question kind of like when people ask me about mold. Really the only way to measure the effectiveness and success of that cleaning is pre- and post-remediation testing by an industrial hygienist. They will record a clean bill of health the same way they do with mold remediation activities. And mold's probably a little easier because you're comparing it to the outside environment. In terms of cigarette smoke and asthma and things of that nature, I would assume they would do some airborne particulate testing. And, you know, they would have to look at what is this specific person or child's allergic, I don't know the word I'm looking for. What is their reactiveness to these specific chemicals? I know I'm personally, I've had that allergy test where they had this done when I was a child, where they lay you down and they prick you 80 or 90 times in the back with all these different substances to see what you react to. Personally, I'm allergic to molds and funguses. Now, we have molds and fungus in everyday air. Specific people react more to certain molds than others. Me in particular, I'm allergic to penicillin, which further takes me into extensive allergies related to penicillium, which is a type of mold and fungus. So if I walk into a home that has strong concentrations of that type of mold, my lymph nodes completely swell up. I start getting a sore throat and can barely talk. So in terms of whether it's safe or not, it's really specific to what that person's reactiveness, because the same person could walk into a home that does not have allergies to penicillium and it be completely ineffective to them.
So it depends.
It does. There's not a yes-no answer to that, and I would never want to put myself out on a limb telling somebody it's safe, and then there's a problem down the line.
This is John from Denver. I would suggest they would have to move into a place that had never been smoked in, because then there'd be no history of anything like that. But my question is, what about people with other chemical sensitivities? Would all this aggravate or alleviate someone who was very chemical sensitive to almost everything?
The ozoning, the chemical change, I would not be of great concern. That chemical change, as stated in the presentation, transfers that molecule into a water vapor, which is not going to be toxic to anyone. If it was, they wouldn't be able to walk the world among us. There could be some potential chemical sensitivities to some of the specific cleaning chemicals that if you, say, for instance, clean carpets with a particular chemical that somebody has a reactiveness or sensitivity to it, and a small child's crawling on that carpet, I'm sure it could affect them. It's no different than if you go into an apartment unit where somebody's been cooking meth. That does the same thing as cigarette smoke or anything else, where it permeates into wall surfaces and carpets, and a small child crawling around on that, putting their hands in their mouth, that's going to have a chemical effect on that child.
Thank you, Jason. Any other comments or questions for Jason?
This is John. I have one last one. Do we get in touch with Jason, or do we get in touch with you, Lynette, if we would like to have him do a presentation? And what does he charge for his time?
Ask Jason. What do you think, Jason?
We have a consulting fee schedule that you're welcome to email me on. I don't know if I put my email on that presentation, but I can give that to you. It's J. Cain, C-A-I-N, at GOBLUSKY.com. You guys are also welcome to look at the Blue Sky Company website, which is at www.gobluesky.com. Just like the email, there's no E in the word Blue Sky. This particular presentation was done for Lynette because she asked me, and I met her at a CAI Christmas party. So, I enjoy the opportunity to get information together, though, as well for people and try to share as best I can. So.
Yeah, we've heard about Lynette at those Christmas parties.
I was just going to say, and we both remember it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, any other questions for Jason?
Thank you. Please stand.